Wrestling Daft presents The Daft Sheet. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Daft Sheet. That's The Daft Sheet, not the clean sheets that Beth Phoenix is putting on our bed for Christian this week at Captain Charisma's The Quest. But we are probably going to get a lot filthier than what OJ Raso is planning on doing with Betty Phoenix. As usual, I am Chris Jack. I am the editor-in-chief of The Daft Sheet, a fictional dirt sheet put together for the purposes of serving the wrestling daft listenership while Rab, Grado and John are busy having careers, I suppose. But as always, I am joined by two of the most knowledgeable, of the most newsworthy men in the world of wrestling to help me fill the daft sheet. And this week, it's, again, you guys seem to be the staples these days. It's Steve Roche and Lewis McNaughton. Lads, how have you been this week? What's been the highlights of your week so far?
For me, today, which is as exciting as it gets. I was doing my John Moxley for the week.
I don't see the scars on your forehead, so I'm assuming they took by the conventional means.
Aye, they did it by the old school Glasgow way, drawing blood. Sorry, that's too dark.
And what about yourself, Lewis? Have you been passing your bodily fluids on to anybody?
Unfortunately not, mate, but not much going on this week. Might get a flu jab or something, spice up my week a wee bit, if that's the bar we're going for nowadays. But nah, no much this week at all. Been looking forward to this. This is the thing that keeps me going in life.
Good stuff. We've got plenty of wrestling to talk about, so hopefully, you know, that's the whatever we're going to discuss is going to be your lifeblood for a good while longer, Lewis. I don't want, you know, you getting all lightheaded and passing out and needing a biscuit just because there's no wrestling to talk about.
Oh, they gave me a punch tea cake, which I was raging about because I should boycott them because they donate to the Tories.
Oh, big boy to Turnock and he's conservative money.
Yep.
Shambles. Mm-hmm. Anyway, hopefully that's as political as we're going to get this week, although we might end up talking about something a wee bit kind of world newsworthy at some point based on events in wrestling over the last 24 hours. But you know, it has been a cracking week for wrestling. In fact, cracking 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since we were last on. Since we were last on, we've had WrestleDream, we've had multiple AEW shows, we've had the Tuesday Night Wars. So there's a lot for this to unpack and spunk across the sheets of the Daft Sheet. So we'll just fire straight into it, lads. Steve, I'll come to you first. For the front page this week, what are you looking to get on the front page and catch everyone's eye with?
I think it's got to be the breaking news that came out today. Apparently WWE have rejected signing CM Punk. Dave Meltzer broke it today. He says that it's a Vince decision as well. They've weighed up the options. I think they've said apparently the negatives outweigh the positives and they don't want to sign him. Part of me isn't surprised. Part of me is also disappointed because I really wanted to see the world on fire, basically.
Oh, aye.
And I wanted to see him appear at Survivor Series in Chicago and get that Road Warrior pop, but it looks like it's not happening. Now, instantly there's people saying, nah, this is a work. They're working as he's going to be at Survivor Series. I don't think they are. I think those days of WWE trying to work us through the dirt sheets, they're gone now. That's more an AEW tactic now than it is a WWE one. And I've always thought, I think there's still too much bad blood there. And I don't think they want the headache of him. Knowing what he did in the AEW locker room, I don't think they want the headache of him there. And I don't think the WWE locker room, I don't think the talent wants him either. the majority of them anyway. Seth Rollins, you know, he's infamously asked the question, would you like CM Punk one day in WWE? And his immediate response was, stay away, you cancer. Doesn't get more blunt than that.
No, it certainly does not.
I doubt. Yeah. The only kind of good money value I see him in being there is to be Roman's one last big opponent.
Mm.
That's the only kind of big money value I see him having there. That and a Seth feud after what Seth said after that, they'd be instantly like, don't know what else to do him.
It's a weird one because obviously, you know, it's been a good few weeks since we've had a CM Punk filled episode of the Daft Sheet. You know, for a while there, it was pretty much every week we were talking about him, but we've had some fallow time while he's been dealing with his sacking from All Elite Wrestling. And again, you know, even like rumours last week, rumours were abound. If we'd recorded last week, we'd have been talking about how, you know, it was a stick on that he was signing, you know, from all the chat that there was going to be, all the Easter eggs that they've been dropping into the Raw and SmackDown over the last wee while. But that report that came out today seems to have pissed all over the fire on it. The only, it's a really intriguing one because where does Punk go? To hear that if he's not going back to the WWE, nobody else can afford them. He's no, I doubt he's going to end up in Japan. Although, in saying that, with Dax Harwood trademarking the CMFTR name, maybe they do have something lined up elsewhere where, you know, they can do something that's going to monetize that. But it's with the Fed sort of kiboshing him coming in at this time, you know, it's not to say that he's not going to go back at a later date, but it's a real weird one as to where he is going to end up, because he's obviously still looking to scratch his wrestling itch. He's obviously not felt fulfilled enough from his time in AEW that he's been seeking out to go to WWE. I mean, Lewis, what's your thoughts on it? What do you think of the whole situation?
I think that CM Punk coming back to WWE, if they really wanted him, they would go and get him. I think it's been clear that he's been the one pushing for it, obviously. I think he'd work well under the WWE sort of establishment right now, with the sort of inmates running the asylum in AEW. Didn't really work for him too well because he didn't have a direct, I suppose you could call Tony Khan his direct boss, but I feel like there was a lack of respect for him a little bit, where CM Punk maybe thought he could do what he wanted. But with more of a hierarchy in WWE, with this person reporting to this person, reporting to this person, reporting to this person, reporting to Punk, at sort of right at the bottom of the totem pole, having to listen to a lot of people and do exactly what he's told, I feel like he'd thrive a little bit more in there. Even though the first time round he was a bit arsey with him, I feel like him getting, 10 years, 12 years older than what he was, I think he'd be perfect in the WWE now, but obviously the bridges are a bit too burnt for that on Triple H and Vince McMahon's side. So I don't know what he's going to do right now. I think he just holds out until maybe he gets that WWE offer, if they've maybe thought it through a bit more, or he sort of rides off into the sunset. I don't want to see him in Impact, or I know Impact's it's good right now, however, but he's a bit too much of a mainstream star for that, and it would seem a bit biggish him just going to Impact or going to wherever else there might be in America for that. So I don't know where he is. He's in a bit of limbo right now.
As I said before, that is quite a strange one in that he's been kind of touting himself about, allegedly touting himself about on there, and it's. I suppose it's a power move from WWE as well. The fact that, you know, that arguably the biggest star outside of WWE has made himself available, and they've been like, nah, no thanks, not now, that kind of thing. Do you think, Steve, do you think that you know, he's maybe going to have to go away for a couple of years, maybe show some of the penitence for these misdemeanors over the last wee while, and prove that he can be a trusted hand and not go off the boil? I mean, with the Endeavor stuff at WWE as well, you'd have thought that with his MMA links, the fact he's been in the UFC, he commentates for one of the UFC feeder organisations as well, you'd have thought that that would maybe have played in his favour. But yeah, I mean, do you see a point in the future, not in the immediate future, but you know, maybe 2-3 years down the line, if he's still got that hunger, that they would take him back?
Yeah, but he has to be genuine about it. He has to go away and realise the biggest star is I'm just a cog in the wheel like everybody else. I think in AEW, he walked around kind of like almost like Hogan in WCW or Shawn Michaels mid-90s WWF, thinking he could do whatever he wanted and can get away with it. And he underestimated Tony Khan. I think he thought he had Tony Khan under the thumb a wee bit until he stupidly and allegedly lunged at him.
And put his life
Tony
in danger.
Khan decided, no, I'm not having that. I'm not getting physically attacked. Especially when I'm the one paying you, motherfucker. Oh, out you go, he's a P45. He also needs to learn to communicate better, especially when it comes to his own political views. Now, I actually share a lot of the political views that CM Punk has. I'm pro-union, I'm pro-transgender rights, but when I also want to have a professional attitude so that I can get people to work with me and so I can, you know, rise further in a career, no matter what it is. See, tweeting something like, go and suck
Saudi dick.
Money, oil, Saudi dick, yeah. Yeah. That ain't a smart thing to tweet, Punk. When you may eventually need to go to those people for a job.
Aye. No, 100%.
Yeah, like, listen, and like, I think the whole Saudi investment fund thing is covered in blood money. It makes me very uncomfortable how deeply enthralled they are in WWE and other sports, like buying Newcastle United and investing heavily in areas like NBA sports and leagues that I love. So it does make me very uneasy, but I accept that's just the way of the world now. And I think CM Punk needs to recognise, unfortunately, sometimes you have to swallow your pride sometimes and work with people whose views, and this is a bit of advice I'd give a lot of people in the world right now. Sometimes you're going to need to swallow your pride and accept that you're going to have to work with people whose political views and beliefs are radically different to yours. Something the whole world, I think, needs to learn right now, as we're seeing from the events of the past week. But, you know, I'm too deep now.
We're getting a bit Michael Jackson, Heal the World, type stuff there. That was a song that was probably out before you were bornless.
I'm really versed in the Michael Jackson realm.
Jeez, that sounded a lot worse than you probably intended it to, though. Anyway, we'll shift to yourself, Lewis. We'll shift to you. I'm not even going to say what was coming into my head there. the CM Punk news today was pretty big, but was there anything bigger in the past 7 days in wrestling, do you think?
I think it's been dominated the last week from this Tuesday night war again for one night only. Obviously NXT versus Dynamite, which has just happened. What did you guys tune into either of them before?
I've seen Dynamite. I watched it live. I thought that I'd be able to watch NXT on my TNT subscription thing, but apparently it's not been uploaded yet. So I've not been able to do that. But I've seen all the.
I'm watching Dynamite. I'm only up to the Switchblade Hangman match, but I know the majority of the stuff that happens in the NXT. I've only seen the Undertaker segment.
I tuned in to NXT purely because I thought there'd be more chaos there than Dynamite. I feel like Dynamite had their sort of, they had their plan ready. They were going sort of match oriented, and they were going by match quality rather than sort of surprises and shocks and this and that. So I just wanted to see what Shawn Michaels had up his sleeve. And to be fair, it was stacked with WWE stars, and then right at the start, Cody Rhodes announces that LA Knight's there as well. I think that they both went in completely different directions. Are the ratings out yet?
I've not seen them yet. They'll probably drop at some point during the record here.
Yeah, but I would imagine NXT got more viewers purely because of the star power it had on it. But the matches were alright as well, to be fair. I fell asleep about halfway through it. I caught up on the Bron Breakker Carmelo Hayes match, and that was a decent enough match. It wasn't anything Brian and Swerve put on, but it was good enough. And I seen a big war of words between, I think that's quite unprofessional as well, Tony Khan battering on about losing.
Someone needs to take his fucking phone away when he's exactly. on the clock. What the exactly. fuck?
Says he's lost Booker of the Year award for that show last night, and just throwing me references, and like they always do. Like, he can't help himself. I've said it before on this show that his one thing is just being too obsessed with what WWE's doing. It's just like, completely dissociate yourself from it and completely focus on your show. It's probably put him off a little bit, wondering what are they up to over there? What's happening over there? Get Christian on the screen when Cody's on. Straight away, stuff like that. Maybe it was intentional, maybe it wasn't, but just shit like that. He had his own booking problems that he had to worry about himself as well. Especially with a certain object that Juice Robinson had in his hand. So I think that WWE is a big enough corporation to just worry about themselves. I think Vince McMahon, other than WCW, past that, he's tended to just sort of worry about WWE, the money that's coming in, the finances, things like that. Especially with CM Punk, it's like, don't need you anymore, we've got money, this is coming in, we're sound, don't worry about any other competition, they're just indie wrestling, backyard wrestling, all that sort of stuff. But Tony Khan seems to have this, we want to be the big man, we want to compete with them and better them, and I'm going to tell everyone that while we do it, not just doing it slyly under the radar.
His approach didn't really work creating wise. According to Pro Wrestling Torch, just after 9 o'clock there, they put out a tweet saying NXT crushes AEW Dynamite in viewership last night, 921,000 to 609,000. In the 18 to 49 demographic, NXT draws 0.3 compared to Dynamite's 0.26. So in terms of stacking the card, For a company that doesn't see AEW as being competition, they stack the card well enough to get a third more viewers than what Dynamite did. But I think, interestingly enough, looking at those numbers, 921,000 to 609, with all the hype, with all the bluster that was going about it, neither of them cracked a million. The NXT never got over the million, which you would have maybe thought they would. Obviously,
why
is that?
Nobody gives a fuck about TV ratings anymore. Streaming is where it's at now.
Yep.
And I'm fed up with this. The only people that give a fuck about TV ratings are Meltzer, Nash, Bischoff, and wee childish YouTubers looking for an excuse to bury the other side.
Yeah, but it's a weird one. I mean, in the UK, we don't really, you know, bother the arse about ratings. You know, it used to be everybody would, you know, you'd get 25 million or something for EastEnders or Top of the Pops and Christmas Day, that kind of thing. But, you know, in the digital age, it's not a thing in the UK. Nobody really cares about ratings. Although, in saying that, I see Hollyoaks is getting axed because viewing figures are down, which will be... Which
Holy
will
shit,
be...
is that right?
Aye, Hollyoaks is getting binned. It's getting binned. I mean, it's been... It's been a good, maybe 15 years since I regularly watched it, but apparently even more folk have been switching it off. But that will be seen as a massive victory for WWE there. But, you know, They put all as many guns in the fire, or as many things in the fire as they could. As you mentioned there, they had Cody, they had LA Knight, they had Cena, they had Paul Heyman, they had The Undertaker. But again, from not seeing it, Lewis, did any of those people make a difference to the show in terms of further than storylines? That, you know, if the viewers, if that 921 viewers come back to NXT next week without that star power, is anything that's happened this week going to make sense?
I think, obviously, they brought in Cody Rhodes for the announcing the Dusty Classic, vaguely, and then he started battling on about other things. I think that the LA Knight in the main event, sorry, not the main event, the special ref and the Dragunov Dominic match.
Dominic
could have done without that. John Cena and Paul Heyman, I don't know whether they're sort of grooming Bron Breakker for some sort of Paul Heyman guy. If that comes about, then yeah, there's some sort of story to it. If not, then just getting another big personality on the show for the Ryans. John Cena, I think it was more of a John Cena sort of trying to give Carmelo Hayes the rub, and The Undertaker coming out to give Bron Breakker the rub, to sort of mould them into the next two stars. I think that was pretty much the point of it. It wasn't really them getting put in there to have a major interaction in the storyline. It was more of just, look at Bron Breakker standing across the ring from The Undertaker. He must be, and to a casual viewer, oh, look at him with The Undertaker, who's that? He must be someone. And then Carmelo Hayes and Undertaker doing the Undertaker pose at the top of the ramp after the show, sort of just like putting eyes on both of them. Other than that, there was nothing really major with Asuka. She came in.
Oh, I forgot Asuka as well.
Pretty much, I wouldn't say squashed, but just proved that she was on a different level to Roxanne Perez. If she was to lose that match, you would think, yeah, something towards the story with Kiana James. But nah, nothing in terms of that. I seen your girl was on TV with Becky Lynch. They're setting up a match for... Yeah, they were setting up a match for Halloween Havoc Night 1. So that should be good, the two Irish girls.
It was good seeing the wee video package there that they had at Fight Factory. I'd been down there a couple of times during my stint as a wannabe wrestler. I've been down for a couple of training sessions down there. Absolutely fantastic setup that they have. And the amount of like guys that have gone through Fight Factory, you know, Becky started there. It was Finn Balor's company to begin with. Him and a guy, Paul Tracy, they had started it off. After, I think it was Irish Whip had kind of, the bubble had burst with it, or the NWA Ireland had burst. So you've had Finn, you've had Becky, Lyra Valkyria, JD McDonough went through it as well. And numerous ones that have ended up in WWE or NXT UK and things like that. Even like Myla Grace, that was in NXT UK, she's in that video as well. So there's a lot of talent has come through that, and I'd imagine like LJ Cleary, who was one of the coaches there, he's been over and done stuff in ICW in the last year. He's over in Japan now, he's in Noah. So it's a really, really good breeding ground. So it was quite cool to see them get their flowers of sorts on that as well. But in terms of the other side of it, so obviously it was the Tuesday Night War. From what you've seen and what you've read on the AEW side, Steve, what do you think has prevented them, apart from the star power put in NXT, what do you think has prevented AEW from getting that higher rating or getting more eyes on their product?
It's a hard one to pin down. It's not like it's not the star power they lacked. I think they lack some storytelling consistency. You can't, in this day and age, right, you can't just get by on star power, because they've got it in abundance, and Adam Copeland, you know, ups it to the nth degree. He is a big, big star. I mean, he goes back to the Attitude Era. So he only has star power today. He's got that kind of attitude era presence about him. He's got that casual fan attention as well. And even my pals that don't follow wrestling remember, oh, Edge, he was one of the guys back in WWF from back in the day. So, like, they know him as they do with Christian, Hardy Boys, etc., etc. Jeff Jarrett's probably in that bracket as well. I think it's they're not doing enough to get more people to tune in every single week. Tony Khan seems to have this belief that, oh, I just need to announce a big match on Twitter and people tune in. You've got to just give them more than matches. You've got to give a reason. You've got to give them that tune in to see what happens next week factor. You know, that this is why big TV shows like Succession, Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, like the reason why they've been such monumental successes because they always gave you that what's going to happen next week cliffhanger like thing. They showed it a couple of weeks ago with the devil mask incident. You know, is it MJF? Is it Adam Cole? That kind of thing. But they didn't build on it. The fact that they gave it a 2-minute reference and then MJF mentioned it in a promo WrestleDream, and they've almost from what I've seen tonight's Dynamite, it's almost like they've forgotten it even happened.
It does get a brief mention, but I think that's maybe suffering because of the way they're booking. So they've got Jay White versus MJF scheduled for Full Gear, which isn't until November. So there's still, you know, maybe 4 or 5 weeks of build towards that.
Yeah.
So they've maybe shot their load a wee bit early in that regard. And again, with Adam Cole injury as well, it's probably...
But something like that, they should be putting that front and centre of what they're doing just now. It seems like the debut of Copeland is overtaking it a wee bit, and I get why. Copeland is a big star, I get it. But the point I'm trying to make is that Tony Khan is still running it too much like a wrestling promotion and not enough like a TV show. And I think it's something he needs to start looking at more. I think he needs to remember that he's running a weekly TV show. If he wants to build an audience, he's got to start grabbing attention away from just wrestling fans. There's only, you know, yeah, there's lots of wrestling fans in the world, but, you know, we're not an overwhelming majority, you know. There's only a few million of us kicking about. He's got to create new, he's got to find new fans, he's got to try and get more casual audiences.
Well, I think there was an attempt to do that at the end of last night's show, because obviously you had the established names all featuring in the finale of the show. So again, if you've not watched it, here's a wee bit of spoilers coming. But at the end of the Adam Copeland Luchasaurus match, Brian Danielson gets involved because he's now facing Christian on Collision. And then you had the BCC coming down. You had Nick Wayne and who else was Nick Wayne?
Oh no, sorry. Did he come down?
Swerve
was involved, yeah. And then you had Hangman involved in it as well. So there was a big, you know, old school SmackDown style schmoz.
Like a big attitude era like ending.
So I think that's what they've tried to do, because they had, you know, Brian and Edge and Christian there, the faces that people would recognise, and then all the guys that aren't, you know, the casual viewer maybe aren't too familiar with. I think they've gone for that as that kind of hook to get people tuning in. And they had that overdone as well. Yeah. They had the overdone for it as well.
I think that would have been really creative and interesting if it didn't happen on SmackDown 4 days ago. You know, they had all the baby faces coming out in the sort of Attitude Era type thing, and I don't know whether I was just a...
But, you know, that used to be the norm, but it was always like in the go-home show before a pay-per-view back in the...
Nitro, back in like 1998-99, they always did that. They always end it where it would be like Hogan, Sting, Piper, Flair, Macho Man, but every kind of main event would be in the ring at the one time, having a big like Battle Royal fucking brawl thing.
Yep. But I mean, in terms of it being a Tuesday night war, would you be invested in, you know, if this happens, you know, maybe like once every quarter, you know, like maybe 3-4 times a year, where the two rival shows go head to head to see who can best other? Do you think there's enough fanfare and hype about it over the last week to get you jazzed for that happening on a more regular basis?
I think when Tony Khan's putting out fucking mental tweets, either is, you know. I think it's a yes and no answer. Yes, because it does make things exciting, but no, because I hate the fallout, because inevitably it comes with all this division and all the marks coming out saying, ha-ha, the NXT outdrew AEW by 100,000, yada, yada, yada. But then AEW fans, I can already see them firing back saying, well, at least our show doesn't have fucking 60-year-old retirees buddying the main event talent in that show. So it's all that pettiness. One thing I was going to say, Chris, is I think Tony Khan can take something out of WWE's book here. I think he needs to start looking hiring TV writers, guys that don't have a wrestling background, have like a TV experience, hire somebody for a professional TV background. I know that for years fans were complaining about that with WWE, so they're hiring guys that don't have a clue about wrestling, that you know writing all these stupid storylines. Well, on occasion they had a success, they came out, they had a home run. They were rare, but they worked sometimes. And it kept Raw and SmackDown alive for a few years because, you know, all right, ratings, they went up and down, but they kept them alive to keep getting big cable TV deals. I think this is something Tony Khan's got to look at.
Yep.
He's in deep with Warner Bros. Discovery, so he's got a direct line to HBO. They don't, TV writers don't get better than that.
Aye, especially if they're going to be like going on to Max and stuff like that, as has been rumored. You'd imagine that there's going to be that they should take any advice and any help that they can get in terms of the writing on there. But I think we can all agree that throughout the Tuesday Night War, the main winners were wrestling fans, because we get treated to two fairly decent shows. I think, like, again, for them only having watched Dynamite so far, it was true to form. Dynamite, first hour of it was fantastic, second hour it was a bit flabby at the start, and then it kind of, you know, those again towards the end. But all in, I think, you know, Tuesday night was a fair night for fighting, and that means that it's going to take the front page, Lewis, so well done on that. The headline that we're going to go for there is Choose Your Fighter. Choose spelled T-U-E-S, and as always, it looks better written down. So we'll go from the front page to the back page, the best action of the last week. Lewis, what was your pick for the best in-ring efforts to go on the back page?
So I watched, obviously, Fastlane at the weekend.
Why? Fastlane happened, didn't it?
Yeah, there was a pretty... There was a pretty lacklustre tag team championship match between Jay and Cody versus the Judgment there. So I think they went, you know, that was pretty pish. We'll give it another go with a different team. So Cody and Jay on Raw on Monday night went up against AKO and Sammy. And I'd say this was a significantly better match. However, before they came out at the start, when they were sort of facing off in the promos, Sami Zayn came out to his old theme. IWC's like, they jump on anything, they go, is this a heel turn for Sami Zayn? Is this a blah 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 blah? It turned out the audio guy just fucked up. just clicked the wrong button, put his old theme on.
The wrong dot wav.
Aye. But to be honest, KO and Sammy, especially Sammy, came off somewhat heelish in this match. You know, they had a sort of, maybe not so heelish, but a little bit like Drew McIntyre, where they just decided to be a little bit more serious and just not really take any bullshit. And they started the match with a big brawl, you know, the sort of Sammy, KO, fight forever sort of thing, scrapping each other in the middle of the ring. started off quite hot, slowed down a little bit, and then they just started hitting big moves on each other. So signatures, blue thunder bombs, super kicks, the exploder suplexes, the Uso splashes, more super kicks, blah blah blah, and it was quite a fast paced match, which was good. And then Cody Rhodes decided, you know what, I'm going to hit myself with a springboard pile driver to myself. By doing that Cody cutter, I don't know if you've seen it, but he did a Cody cutter and landed directly on the top of his head, and I thought that was pretty much Cody's career over, and the show shut down. But you know, in true Cody Rhodes fashion, he rolled off and then just got back in the ring for the win. And so I thought it was a good match. There's probably better matches. I thought Steve might go for an AEW match, and you got a couple of good matches there, so I didn't go for Brian versus Swerve or anything. I thought I'd try and pick one of the better ones from WWE. So maybe other people have different choices on what the match of the week was, but I enjoyed that one. So, and obviously the ending was quite funny.
I caught a wee bit of it this morning, while I was working, because it was on TNT Sports, and I quite liked the promo that led to the match.
Yeah.
With Sammy and KO saying, look, the only really chuffed that you guys don't get the belts, you've taken them off the bloodline. That's been a big issue, but at the same time, it's bittersweet because, you know, we want those belts back. And that's maybe played into the kind of the heelish nature that you were saying there, Lewis, in terms of they were that wee bit more serious because they wanted the belts back on that. So it's a, and again, that the final exchanges of it, there was a lot of kind of broken up pins where you thought one team was going to, and it was very late breaking up the pins as well. It was like two and nine tenths type kickouts and stuff like that and breakups. So it seemed to be quite fast paced, quite energetic, quite frenetic. Cody and Jay reigned supreme and probably went and get pished again, as they did after Fastlane. I mean, do you see there being much longevity in this sort of odd bedfellows type tag team?
Not really, because surely to God, we know that Cody's getting groomed to take the belt from Roman. If The Rock isn't coming back, we know it's going to be Cody. I kind of think they go off Priest and Balor because eventually they're going to do the cash in with Priest.
Mm.
I think that's got that. It's got the air of that inevitability. I think Seth, from what I've seen, Seth's days are being world champ are numbered. Drew and Saudi, and I know they teased the cash in, but Drew stopped it on Raw there. So I think they'll follow that up in Saudi, and then they'll capitalise on that. It's hard to say who they. I think I could see them. I mean, logically, you would think they're going to drop it to Jimmy and Solo, probably.
Mm.
You know, reignite the bloodline feud.
It's strange where we're going to go with it. I mean, you know, essentially, you know, it'd be pretty damn thought of them if that was finishing the story for Cody, making him tag team champion instead of putting the big one on him. But it's exciting times, and again, I think there needs to be a wee bit more kind of, maybe diversity is the wrong word, but a bit more of a kind of mixed bag when it comes to the tag division in the WWE. But again, it's another face. It's another face tag team. You know, apart from what Judgment Day.
Street Profits, surely it's them. Because they're heel now, aren't they?
You've got Judgment Day, Street Profits, because they're kind of part of the Hurt Business. You've got Imperium as well, kind of kicking.
I think it'll be them. Actually, your next champs are then.
So it's putting the cat amongst the pigeons, or the I can't think of another thing to say on there. I can't move the pigeons, that'll do. What about yourself, Steve? What would you say would be the best in-ring action of the week to put in the back page?
Well, you're right, Lewis. It is an AEW match, but not the one you're going to. You're not the one you're thinking. Swerve and Danielson, yes, was a brilliant match, but I'm not going to go for it because I think we all knew it would be a great match. I'm actually going to go with Saturday from Collision, FTR against Big Bill and Ricky Starks, just because how shocking it was. It was so unexpected. It was effectively a squash match where Starks and Big Bill became tag team champions. It was kind of out of nowhere. And it was all done and dusted within, what, 5-6 minutes? They put Wheeler through the table and then just basically demolished Harwood, and then Starks pinned them 1-2-3, and they were the new champs. I think it was just, I was just shocked at how, like I said, how unexpected it was and how, you know, how dominant they put them over. I've later found out there's reasons to it. Yeah, Wheeler's been working with a back injury, and basically he can't work with it anymore. So AEW just did what they had to do and get the belts off FTR. There were a few dirt sheets out there saying, oh, it's because FTR don't want to be dropping the belts to the Bucks, which I think's a lot of shite. I think also Starks and Big Bill deserve this. Starks especially.
There's been a big swell of support behind Big Bill. I think a lot of that comes from being, he used to live with John Moxley. So obviously bringing him in, you know, he's had his demons in the past. I mean, who wouldn't have their demons after getting dumped by Carmella? and he's worked.
Corey Graves and all, what the fuck?
I know. Despicable. But the fact that, you know, he kind of had a bit of a redemption arc. He went through his impact stage, he got rid of Enzo, and since coming in as Big Bill and not W. Morrissey, as he kind of debuted as in AEW, Big Bill seems to just be this more complete, this more rounded character. The muscle for the cockiest version, Ricky Starks as well. So they have worked well together. I don't think the having Starks be Bill's manager when he gets suspended for flipping the Steamboat, I don't think that's just been a coincidence. They've obviously had this planned that they were going to make this a big man wee man team, and I'm excited to see where they go with the tag titles, because for the longest time it feels like it's always been a face team that's had the tag belts in AEW, so it'd be good to see like a proper heel team and see, you know, what Starks can get up to in terms of defending it. Be interesting to see if, you know, the dynamic is, because the Bullet Club Gold have got such a presence on Collision, you know, whether it's the Guns, or if you had like Jay and Juice going for them. You know, they're the kind of, that's who FTR's been feuding with. There's not an awful lot of other face tag teams, unless the Bucks start going over to Collision and doing more than that as well. So again, just like I was saying about Cody and Jay, it's kind of resetting the division, almost in that sense, which I'm all for. And it's a just award as well for Ricky Starks. You know, he had the all-out main event taken away from him, where he was going to be probably become the real world's champion and all that pish as well. So it's not as much of a make good, but it's certainly something that he can sink his teeth into.
It's great that he's finally got his first proper title win. He had the FTW belt, that doesn't really count.
No,
the AEW themselves even acknowledge that's an outlaw belt. So it's great for him to get one of the recognised belts as well, because he's deserved it, because he's been brilliant since Collision started, and he's really made the most of this heel turn, and it's really good to see for Big Bill, because he's been maybe one of the surprise stars of AEW. When we heard they first signed him, we were going, this is a bit weird, because he was a bit of a he was more a miss than a hit during his WWE run, but you can tell he's really matured. He's got himself in better shape. I think he's even spoken podcast saying that in WWE I didn't deserve the push I was getting. I was given too much too early, and I had a bad attitude, and I wasn't living a good lifestyle at the time. So he's been very honest by saying that he didn't really deserve what WWE was giving him at the time. So yeah, it's really good to see that he's, you know, matured and changed, and he's getting the rewards for the hard work he's putting in now. And also for a horse, for a big guy, he's a really good worker.
Mm.
You know, he's you know, he doesn't have bad matches. Or I mean, he needs, because of his size, he needs his opponent to work a bit for him. But you know, he keeps up with him. And I mean, he tells good story. He works the crowd very well as well.
That's it. I mean, you know, he's built like an absolute star. He's got the look, and let's not forget, you know, he's 7 foot tall, and you can't teach that. so it's good to see him on that kind of redemption arc, as I was saying earlier on. In terms of FTR, you're saying there, Steve, about, you know, them being a bit banged up and whatnot. There was a report come out today. I can't remember who it was that put it on, but they were saying that, you know, it had been planned. It wasn't a case of because of injury. This is why they're giving up the belts. But you know, it's a refreshing thing. It'll maybe just give them time to kind of calm everything down. Because again, I'd imagine the turmoil of CM Punk getting let go will have a big effect on it.
There was people leaving the FTR were leaving because they're in the half. They might have followed Punk at the door, but that's been totally kiboshed. Harbage made it clear we're here for the foreseeable. I think they're both contracted till 2026 anyway. Or 27 even, so yeah, they're not going anywhere. And like, yeah, they'll miss Punk, but they know they're not going to get the treatment elsewhere that they've got with AEW. AEW still, for me, is the tag team promotion.
Aye.
You know, they would do well in WWE, but they wouldn't get the attention that they've got. They wouldn't be pushed nearly as much.
I was quite surprised that they didn't make an appearance in the schmoz at the end of Dynamite last night, because obviously they have a big affiliation or a big relationship with Edge outside WWE.
That's right, because
Cash Wheeler traded Edge for these comebacks and everything like that.
Don't they live in the same town as well, don't they, in North Carolina?
They're quite pally. So I was quite surprised they didn't come out for that. An interesting week of tag team action on both sides of the wrestling divide. And I think on this occasion, Steve, I'm going to give you the back page on this one. And the headline is going to be FTR forfeit their run. And again, because it's FTR on that as well. We don't have a centrefold this week. We do have the interview with Flash, Morgan Webster and Danny Luna in the can. I have it downloaded. I have converted it from M4A to MP3 and saved myself about 600 meg of data by doing so. But I'm going to release that in the first half of that in next week's podcast, and then the second half of it the week after, just in the lead up to the Impact shows, so you can hang tight for that. But in the meantime, we're just going to blast right into the next section of the podcast, which is page 3, the most titillating bits of gossip from the week. So Steve, I'll come to you first on this one. What did you have as the biggest tease of the wrestling week?
Well, it's appropriate. This is the page 3 segment. It's about Mariah May. She's a dad's favourite, and we'll leave it at that.
I'm sure I either worked or was a trainee on a show she did over here before lockdown. I'm sure she was on the same card. It may even have been the same card that I had my debut on. I didn't have any kind of interaction with her. I just know that the name was familiar from then about kind of early 2000s.
With her as well. I first heard about her because
I was...
Be honest, you were Instagram perving.
No, mate. It might be part of the story, but we'll get there. What happened was, and mind the Raw that came at Glasgow?
Yes.
In 2017. 2017, was it? Yeah. So she was there, but she wasn't a wrestler yet. She was sort of just maybe becoming a bit of a sort of influencer-y type on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And my pal, being the beast that he is, found her on Instagram. And I'm sure she only had something like 5,000 followers, 4,000 followers at the time on that. And so I hopped on the train, obviously. And me and him have followed her on Instagram since 2016. And I've seen her whole wrestling sort of come up.
Jeez, I'm so glad you continued that sentence there. So glad you continued that sentence.
Seen her wrestling come up from about 2016. Of her wrestling in front of two people to her wrestling for stardom, being one of the main stars. So it's quite good to see how fast she's risen through the ranks and became a big talking point in the sort of women's side of wrestling at the moment. So it's good. Cut that out if I sound like too much of a beast, but play on.
she is one of the fast rising stars on the indies. Like Lewis said, she became a very big star in stardom. She was the, up until recently, the goddess champion. They've got loads of different weird championships in stardom, but I'm told that's one of the highest rated ones. And she's, for an indie star, she's got a heck of a lot of followers on social media. Mm. I think when I saw her Instagram, it's over 200,000. That's huge for an indie star that's not been in either WWE or AEW yet.
I think she garnered a lot of support over lockdown as well, because she was one of the more vocal wrestlers in terms of outing beasts, basically, during Me Too.
Hopefully, I was the mention.
I think she was one of the ones that did a big kind of statement one.
She gets sued, and she had to do like a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter thing to get her legal fees and stuff paid. So she's obviously had a tough time of it, not just, you know, mm-hmm. from dealing with that, but obviously dealing with the circumstances that led to that as well, mm-hmm. Which is never something that you want to see, and, you know, whether male, female, or whatever in wrestling, you never want to see people being taken advantage of and that kind of stuff. So I suppose, you know, from that point of view, now that she's, you know, she's on the up, she's getting noticed, and she's on the periphery of AEW.
It's not been formally announced, but putting the pieces together, she's on her way to AEW. She put a tweet saying, need to catch a plane, and it's been all but confirmed that she's now worked her last match with Stardom. Expectations are she comes into AEW, and apparently she's going to immediately work something with Toni Storm. We don't know if she's going to be a tag partner or if she's going to be a rival. Like, they might do the theory is that they're going to do like the Jane Russell, Betty Davis type feud, famous like film buffs like myself will know. Joan Russell's shit. What you call her? Joan Crawford. Sorry, that was it.
Take out a video for the patron here where what's going on in the middle of my screen right here.
the Bette Davis and Joan Crawford, two very famous film stars of the 40s and 50s, had a legendary feud, and then they worked together on a movie called What Happened to Baby Jane. And they even made a TV show about it, starring Susan Sarandon and who was the other one? I think it was Gina Davis. I need to look that one up. But it was a legendary feud, and they fought ferociously on the set of this movie. But the director smartly used that in their performances, and they both gave like these legendary old-timer performances. So I think they're going to come in and do a feud that's similar to that, or they're going to have something like where Mariah May was this actress who Toni Storm shunned or something like that, and try to bury, or she's a hot new young up and coming act, and Tony Storm's the washed up old act that's trying to get kicked out. They're going to do that kind of type feud, kind of like what they did back in the day with Sable and Tony Wilson, but much cleaner for the woke generation kind of thing.
No, that'd be, it'd be good to see that kind of thing, you know, because obviously this timeless Tony Storm character is amazing. In terms of the lunge into desperation that she's having as this kind of fallen star that's looking to kind of ascend back up, and if she's got that kind of antagonist that comes in the 2.0, I suppose, then it's going to be quite a fun thing. And
I know it's great as well that there's somebody out there that AEW are putting out. It's about the character, you know. It's not about, you know, she's not just a wrestler. It's like what I talked about earlier with AEW need to start being more like a TV show rather than a wrestling show. That's the kind of stuff they need to be putting out more of, like more Tony Storms.
Cool. So yeah, that's quite a nice bit of gossip to start us off. Lewis, what would you put up against it? What would be your pitch for Page 3?
I think, I don't know whether it's heartwarming or, but I don't know, some people might think it's a bit weird, but apparently they're looking to still go with the Wyatt Six and some Firefly Funhouse segments. A few weeks ago, maybe just after his death, I was pissed one night and I came home from a night out and went, okay, I'll stick on YouTube, see what I can see. And they had the entire collection of the Firefly Funhouses. And I didn't realise how brilliant they were. He's such a good... he was such a good personality. He could play so many different things. You realised when you were watching these Firefly Funhouses just how sort of creative and talented he actually was. So... because he had so many layers to his character and so many sort of different personas and bits about him, I'm glad they can sort of keep it going with sort of honouring his name with these Firefly Funhouse segments that are apparently in the works to come back. I don't know how they would go, maybe just with the characters and then sort of the Firefly Funhouse, the Wyatt Six going off in their own directions as the main characters. And apparently they're looking to get some form of faction. And what I seen was as well, there was a... I don't know if it was his pals or whoever, but they were the ones under the characters, the masks, at Extreme Rules last year. It wasn't Grayson Waller or Joe Gacy or everyone who thought it was. It was just his pals and people he worked with, which was interesting. But I think there are a lot of gaps and people not doing a whole lot that could definitely use a big story. So like a Joe Gacy, like a Bo Dallas, if he was coming back, even Ava Rain under the Abby the Witch sort of character, things like that. It'd be a good little faction to bring in, whether it they come onto TV in matches or it's just sort of a couple of months on and on. That's all right.
You know who'd be brilliant in that role? Rab's niece.
Yes.
Aye.
I get them involved in it.
I know Braun Strowman, he's obviously coming back from an injury, but I think he'd be good to sort of honour in there, bring Rowan back for something like that as well, and have, whether it's a few weeks or a couple of months or maybe even lead to something, a sort of cinematic match at WrestleMania. Just give that story sort of time to play out, you know what I mean? Because it's not him as an in-ring personality really doing his thing. So say, for example, Owen Hart had a story lined up to go to WrestleMania, and then obviously tragically what happened to him, you can't replace him with anyone else to go to that sort of finish line. But with Bray Wyatt, There is leeway there to sort of honour him by finishing that story with other characters. So I think that's a good thing they're doing if they push through with it. Personally,
I think if it'd been established a wee bit more, you know, if before things had went awry with them, they'd been able to flesh out who the Wyatt Six were. You know, we had Uncle Howdy, we were aware of, you know, the other Firefly Funhouse characters becoming sentient and stuff like that. But if those characters had been more fleshed out and we'd got a wee bit more out of them, I would say, you know, there's grounds there that they could carry on. But I don't know, it's maybe too soon just now.
Yeah.
It's maybe too soon just now, but I don't know how I would feel about it. Because again, the Wyatt, Wyndham the Thunder himself, was the driving force. He was the creative spark of all of that.
Yeah.
And that was some of the issues with it, was that he was so involved with the creative of it that a lot of things never got to their conclusion.
I'd imagine he had stuff written down that he shared with the writers and Triple H and that. And I think if they were to play that out on telly, that would be a good way of kind of honouring his memory kind of thing. I really don't hope they don't use it as a shameless cash grab, because let's be honest, they did that with Eddie Guerrero. They used that to push Ray, which always left a bit of taste in my mouth, a wee bit. But you know, I'm for it happening as long as it's for the right reasons.
I think they can do something as well, as you think about, like, artists who die, such as one of the rap ring of like Juice WRLD and Pop Smoke and people like that who have had all this unreleased music. Michael Jackson at times as well, that's just sitting there and gets released and turn out to be big hits and things like this. The genius that he was, it would be a shame, you know what I mean? It would be a shame for his sort of ideas and wisdom to not be played out in some form, whether that be in a year's time or...
I read something like Prince has got something like mental, like 2,000 unreleased records that they're going to start releasing soon as well. You know, Tupac, they'll no doubt, now that the news came out there was finally an arrest in relation to his murder, they'll no doubt release something about him. In fact, there's a TV show that Disney Plus are starting next week about him.
Ah, right, cool.
So already, like, that's in swing. So, look, WWE, I know they've got to make money, so, you know, if they've got something untapped there with Bray Wyatt, they're going to do it. Like I said, just please do it for the right reasons.
And again, they'll have the IP on it as well, surely. So, you know, once the horrible phrasing, but once the dust settles on everything that's happened with Wyndham the Thunder over the last year, you know, they've got the copyright, they've got the licensing to do whatever they want with that character in the world that it's created there. For page three, I think, Lewis, I'm going to go with you on this one. I think that, you know, the possibilities of bringing that kind of universe, or that kind of world back to the WWE universe, is definitely intriguing, if not something that anybody really wants immediately. So the headline I'm going to give that one is Brave Move to Resurrect Wyatt's World. So we'll have that. Now, usually we would go to the TV pages at this point, but I'm itching for a quiz. Plus as well, from the selections that you guys gave me today, I think, Lewis, you had suggested, the press conference from Fastlane. Go and check it out. If you can find the 2-minute compilation of Cody and Jay being steaming, do it. It'll give you a good thing and a good feeling, a good bit of buzz. And Prince Nana on Talk Is Jericho was your choice, Steve. Again, I might check that out. Prince Nana, I don't know an awful lot about him. I love his dancing on the way to the ring and how he's been interwoven into the Ring of Honor style, or the Ring of Honor stuff coming into AEW. So those are two things worth checking out. If I was going to chuck in anything myself on that, just to kind of round this wee section out, I would say the trailer for the Iron Claw dropped today and looks amazing. Although I didn't see MJF in the trailer, but Jeremy Allen White and Zac Efron look like they have put the work in to
actually, we need to watch along for that.
We need to get something sorted on it. So there's three brief picks to look out for as part of our TV pages. But we're going to go on to this quiz. Now, two reasons I wanted to do the quiz that we're doing. Newspapers, radio shows, they love an on this day type thing. They love to, you know, let people know what happened on this day, you know, however many years ago. And coupled with the fact that that Adam Copeland has jumped ship and retained his synonymous theme tune, we're going to have a little game of our own of wrestling on this day. So what I'm going to do is I have pulled up some information of things that have happened in the world of wrestling on this day, the 11th of October, throughout wrestling history. I'm just going to ask these questions about that. So I'm just going to bring up question number one, or screenshot number one.
You could completely expose us as...
So...
Completely contradicting what you said about the two most knowledgeable men in wrestling.
So here we go. This is number one, and it's basically shout in with your name first to give the answer. Okay, so in 2005, Simon Dean defeated Paul London, Kid Cash defeated Sho Funaki, and Hardcore Holly defeated Sylvain at the taping of which WWE show?
Steve.
On
that must be Velocity.
Velocity is. That's a point. That's a point to Steve. Good buzzing in there. I just need to figure out a scoring system here.
I love Velocity.
I would have gone with Heat. That sounded Roy to me, to be fair.
So that's 1-0 to Steve. We'll go to... In 2019, who defeated Charlotte Flair on an episode of SmackDown to take the SmackDown Women's title?
Lewis. Ronda.
Incorrect. Steve, chance to go 2-0 up here.
Bailey. I remember her being champ around that time.
Bailey it is.
Yes.
Bailey it
is.
I'm
being done a couple.
Yep. Also on that show that happened on this day in 2019 at the T-Mobile Arena in Paradise, Nevada, Otis and Tucker defeated Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel in a dark match. Seth Rollins defeated Roman Reigns by disqualification. King Corbin defeated Shorty G, by pinfall. Big E and Kofi and Xavier defeated AJ Styles, Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows in a six-person tag. So a pretty stacked show.
To be fair, someone's defeated Charlotte for the title 15 times, so there's a few to choose from there, to be honest.
First I thought Becky, but then Becky would have been Raw champion then.
What was my question going to be on this one? What we'll go for on this. So in 2012 at the Impact Zone in Orlando, Florida, the main event of this taping saw Jeff Hardy defeat one half of Beer Money.
Lewis.
Which half of Beer Money did Jeff Hardy defeat?
The fact that Jeff Hardy... Can you clarify whether Jeff Hardy was a heel or a face at this point? Am I getting that?
He won by disqualification.
Right, I'm going to go with James Storm.
Incorrect. It was...
Bobby Roode.
I can't really throw that one over to you, Steve. I can't really give you on that. That was an Impact taping.
50-50 chance I've got it wrong. Call the quizzer.
Austin Aries beat James Storm in the opener on that show. Hernandez beat AJ Styles. Christopher Daniels and Kazarian beat Bully Ray and Sting. And Miss Tess Macker defeated Gail Kim. That AJ Styles match only went 3 minutes. That's you don't usually see an AJ Styles match go that short, especially in Impact. So it's a bit of an odd one. Bit of an odd one. Right. In 1999, there was a very, very stacked WCW Nitro taping. 9,000 in attendance at the Mississippi Coast Coliseum in Biloxi, Mississippi. The main event saw a tag team match where Lex Luger and Rick Steiner were defeated by Bret Hart and who?
Steven Goldberg.
Oh, Lewis, get in there first there. Lewis, get in there first.
To be fair, I was between two. I was either going to go for Scott Steiner or Goldberg. But because I think Steve's maybe given me a slight hint there, I'll go with Goldberg.
Incorrect.
Oh, no.
Incorrect.
Can I get it?
Go on then, pass it back over, Tom.
Yeah, it can be passed
Chris
over.
Chris Benoit.
It is. It's Chris Benoit, the infamous wrestler.
Name redact.
Chris Benoit and Bret Hart defeated Lex Luger and Rick Steiner. So that's you thinning up here, Steve. That's you know your onions when it comes to stuff that has happened. Right, so the
I pride myself on wrestling knowledge as well, so I'm fucking disappointed here, mate.
Okay, so in 1997, there was an ECW show in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. There was a World Heavyweight ECW title match took place on that show. Shane Douglas became champion by defeating who?
Steve. Oh, shit.
I've got a name on my head.
Right, my first guess is Sabu.
Incorrect, Lewis.
I don't know if he's maybe too late for this, but I'm going to go with Terry Funk.
Incorrect, it was Al Snow. Al Snow dropped the ECW World Heavyweight title.
I thought maybe Bam Bam Bigelow.
Was Bigelow on that one? No. So this was 97 and it took place in front of 400 people, but there was no Bam Bam Bigelow on that card. Right, so as it stands, it's 3-0. We're down to the last question here. And to
it's
be
worth 4 points, sweet.
Yep, it's going to be worth 4 points. It's going to be worth 4 points. So you're still in with a chance here, Lewis. Okay. So this one's about a wrestler who was born. I'm loving that I've got this soundboard thing working now. I'm never going to be off it. You know what I've just realised as well? None of those bits have been playing. I've had it on the wrong setting. Have you been hearing it?
I was going to say no. None's been played.
Oh, you've. So I'm gonna have to.
I could hear it. I could hear it vaguely though.
Right. So I'll take that bit again. So this one's about wrestlers who were born. I can't believe that none of them have played it. I'm gonna have to go back and edit all in now. Right, because you are so far behind at the moment, Lewis, I'm going to give you the option 1, 2 or 3. Pick a number 1, 2 or 3 here.
2.
Okay, so which current WWE wrestler was born on this day in 1988?
Is that what I'm getting?
Yep. Current WWE superstar born October the 11th, 1988.
How old does that make them? 35?
That would make them 35 today, yep.
Is that exactly today?
Exactly today.
On this day! I'm trying to think if I've seen any happy birthdays. Ilya Dragunov.
Incorrect. Steve, you want to have a guess at this one?
Check it. They were singing happy birthday to him.
Yesterday.
2 a.m. What? 2 a.m. at me. I had a different name in my head, but... Rikishi?
No, Ricochet.
Steve, you have got yourself an extra 4 points. It is Trevor, Ricochet, Trevor Vic O'Shea, born on this day, October 11th.
I don't believe that. I think
I'm not. I swear to God, I'm not working. You.
I think the VAR.
I swear to God, I'm not
watching
replay.
I don't know if you can see. I'm calling for a replay of this match.
I swear, my mother's life. I've not watched it. That was just the one that somehow just came to me.
I'll put
somehow
the
good process, lads.
Yeah, I'm putting it into the group chat there so you can see
it.
There's
I believe you, mate. I believe you. Fair play, Steve.
If you'd picked number one instead of number two, it would have been Rhea Ripley that would have gone for on that.
27th birthday today, yep. I should have picked number one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And if you picked number three, I was going for Taz, who was born in 1967. So that is an absolute clean sweep for you there, Steve. So
big boy from Turkey, could have gone with him.
So 7 points in there, which kind of evens everything out, doesn't it? Like evens things out for the week on this week's episode of the Daft Sheet. So Steve and Lewis, thank you very much for joining me. We've hit the headlines with front page this week with regards to the Tuesday Night Wars was choose, as in Tuesday, your fighter. We went for FTR forfeit their run for the back page, and Lewis gave us the Bray Wyatt six story, which had the headline "Brave Move to Resurrect Wyatt's World." So yeah, thank you very much for listening. I will now have to go and edit in all those wee bits that on this day thought we were playing during that. Hopefully there's going to be a main show at some point in the next month. I don't know, I'm not privy to anybody's diary, hopefully there is one, but hopefully you're enjoying the Daft Sheet in the meantime. Just all the usual stuff, if you want a t-shirt that says Margaret the Fiend or anything like that, go to the Spreadshirt thing, sign up to the Patreon so you can get into the Discord and you can chat to us guys and gals in there. And however you enjoy your wrestling for the rest of this week, for the rest of this month, or even on this day, make sure that you keep it daft and you keep it sheety. See you later, guys.